Good morning. Two weeks ago, I preached on Advent as a time of preparation for the coming of Jesus and how some of its practices are actually based in pagan faiths that preceded Christianity. How Advent was a time of preparation to make us ready for the mystery of Christmas. And Christians have in no way cornered the market on mystery. 2 days ago was the winter solstice, a time when pagans and earth-based religions recognize the longest night and the shortest day. You heard our time for all ages today, a story that spoke of the mystery. Will the sun return? Will life start over again? Will we break the back of winter, or will it break us? There is an emptiness to winter. And I do not mean that it is a wasteland or simply something to be endured, but it is a time when there is less of everything except snow and cold and dark. Folks who don't live here, I suspect, think that what I mean when I say that I like having four seasons is that I love having fall colors, which I do. But I also love this time of emptiness, when the light is softer and the sounds are quieter. There is a bit of a hush over nature and a sense that anticipation is just right around the corner, as if we are anticipating anticipation. And in centuries past, when we lived in a more agrarian society, it must have been particularly empty. With no electricity, the dark had to have seemed particularly difficult and straining. This fall, I had the opportunity to talk to someone who had never seen snow, never lived in snow. I got to sing the praises of snow just a little bit. I'm not sure I knew until that moment just how much I actually like snow. One of my favorite times in winter is when it has snowed at night, and if I happen to wake up before dawn, which is so much easier to do in December than in June, by the way. When I wake up before the plow starts, before the commuters, there is a muffledness to nature. Stillness like no other. It brings new meaning to silent night. And there is a magic in that moment, because the snow has covered over old footprints and dirty frozen puddles and tire tracks and soot and dirt. My house sounds different after a nighttime snow. It's like nature's soundproofing, really. If we pay attention to the emptiness, we may find that we are making space for something new. We may find we are making space for something that will not bloom until spring, and that space contains a bit of mystery, because we don't exactly know what will bloom, do we? Now, some folks who are much more learned than I and probably know better than I say that the early pagans who celebrated Yule created their rituals in a way as a part of a way of calling back the sun, for it had fallen below the horizon and there was a fear that it would never come back. Perhaps that is true, what they were trying to mean in those rituals, but I also just find that just a tiny bit patronizing. Yule was and is especially a time of storytelling, and some of those stories come from eons ago. And even eons ago, those stories came from eons ago. The people who first celebrated Yule and helped to shape its rituals had a sense of history and time. But what they may have been much more aware than we are is how vulnerable we humans really are. Perhaps they knew that the sun will rise every morning and that the spring will indeed follow every winter, that there is a permanence to nature. But will any one of us be there to experience it? That is another question. Stonehenge may not have been built to beckon the sun back so much as to reassure those humans there that the humans had as much presence as the nature around them. The sense of impermanence may not have been about the sun, but rather about us. So here in central New York, we know what those dark days of winter are. We know how long those nights can be. We know what it feels like when it seems like the sun is permanently hiding from us. Most of us, I bet, can easily tell if the mud we walk on is frozen or simply dried. That was a big surprise to me when I moved east. We all know the roads can be treacherous and sidewalks even more so. As winter sets in and the snow is on the sidewalks, I develop a different gait, one that is designed to keep me steady on slippery sidewalks. I have different aches, different muscles being used. We know the importance of midwinter frivolity, assuring us that life goes on. It's not so great to be over busy, but a little bit of busyness can give you something to look forward to and a way to distract oneself from the inevitable long nights. Many, many of our traditions that keep us busy at this time of year are borrowed from our northern European pagan ancestors. Norsemen believed that the sun was a great wheel of fire that would roll away from the earth and back, and they would encourage the return of the sun with great bonfires and large logs to burn on the home fires, the Yule logs. They would decorate with boughs of evergreen and put ornaments like the sun, often a many-pointed star shape, out on all the trees all around to attract the sun back to the earth. Many cultures, both modern and historical, celebrated with fires and lights, both to light the longest night and to welcome back the sun. Even jolly old Saint Nick seems to have a pagan ancestor. We have to go back a bit to find that pagan legend and myth associated with Santa, and we look to Odin. The 13th century poetic Edda is a compilation of stories and poems from Scandinavian history, some as early as 985 CE. In this work from Snorri Sturluson's Prose Edda, we learn about Odin riding an eight-legged horse named Sleipnir that can leap great distances. At Yule, Odin leads a great hunting party through the sky in celebration. The story gives rise to comparisons of Santa and his eight reindeer flying through the sky. In some traditions, Odin's Yule time ride, children could place their boots near the chimney, filled with treats for Sleipnir and Odin, and would reward them for their kindness with food of candy and gifts. The tradition still continues in Belgium and Germany and the Netherlands. In other Germanic countries, the practice has been replaced with the hanging of stockings. So I do giggle at my fellow Christians who rant about Jesus being the reason for the season as they hang their stockings and decorate their porches with lights and greens, as they bring a tree inside and hang shiny ornaments and more lights on it, as they imbibe a little nog and sing some songs to their neighbors. If an 11th century Norseman were able to see our celebrations, I think he or she would recognize a great many things. Interestingly, our Puritan ancestors banned the celebration or recognition of Christmas when they were busy establishing their church in America. They did not believe that the celebration had firm biblical roots. And given the number of pagan Yule details that are included in Christmas, they may be more right than we give them credit for. Now, I do not describe my faith as pagan, and I am unlikely to participate in a true Yule vigil, since I am not one to stay up all night. But as a Unitarian Universalist, there are truths that I can learn from these ancient traditions, these rituals, these beliefs. At a Yule vigil, there are elements that we can all relate to, I think. Food and drink, stories and gifts. But it is a vigil, not just an all-night party. There is the calling of the quarters, as we did at the beginning of the service. Usually, there is some kind of fire outside, if possible, where the Yule log is burned, and the fire must be tended all night. It keeps the dark and cold at bay, and it beckons the sun in the morning, so folks take turns keeping the fire. It's an important thing to keep that fire. So perhaps as we celebrate our chosen traditions, we can remember to keep a fire lit in our hearts and in our souls. Perhaps we can be a light for those around us, reminding them that the darkness is not all that there is. And maybe we can remember that this is a group effort, this being a light to the world. No one of us can do it by ourselves. A pagan colleague of mine was talking about his Yule rituals, and what he said was that it was the longest night, and the vigil is kept by the community because it is the community that will pull you through the longest night. And as a UU, I could so agree with that. We each come here and gather and in our own way remind ourselves and each other that there is something larger than me, the individual, something more wondrous than the one. And in that, we are able to see and feel mystery and awe and wonder. And in that, there is the promise of that new light. Somehow, to me, there is this mystery. When you gather a community together, the gathered power and impact somehow exceeds the simple sum of the gathered. The sum of the parts is greater than the sum of the whole. As much as it takes time and effort to gather together to be in community, to stay connected, it is so worth it. There are those times when life is tough and it's hard to see where the light is, hard to know what to do or who to be, hard to know what the future will bring. And that is precisely when we should gather together with our community, when we should raise our glass, make a toast, tell a story, remind ourselves that there is hope to be found in the love of friends that surround us. We may be very far away from family at this time. We may be far away from friends, but we can gather here in this place with one another and remember the reason for the season. Love, light, friends, family, emptiness, welcoming, waiting, preparing, receiving, expectation, mystery. In a world without end, may this be so.